This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, everyone. It is Enterprise. My name is Rich Bradbury. This morning, I'm joined in the studio by...
Arvind Braj.
And Christine Wong.
Welcome to the show, guys.
Hello.
How are you two?
Hello.
Now, it's day 14 of the Movement Control Order, and we're continuing our focus on SMEs and the challenges they're facing. Last Friday, the Prime Minister unveiled the new package, the Brihatin stimulus package, in hopes of preserving the economy and mitigating unemployment.
Yeah, so some of the initiatives introduced in the package include tax installment and EPF contribution deferrals, additional allocations to the special relief facility, and microcredit financing for SMEs.
But are all of these working? Recently, one of our previous guests on Open for Business, Joachim Sebastian, the managing director of Everpeaks, wrote an open letter entitled "A Letter to Our PM from an SME" on his website, and we actually managed to speak to him about it. Joe, let's start with how you are coping with the recent events as an entrepreneur for 7-8 years now.
Okay, as a company, I run three Sydney Amber Huts. We have a total team size of about 22 people. And it is a challenge, right? It's a challenge. And it's been challenging for the past 3 to 4 years, being a startup that's growing from zero to where we are right now. So in terms of pressure, or in terms of the day-to-day, it's supposed to have been a lot better this year, but because of what's going on, it's not. However, I think there are many, many ways for us to get through this particular issue. For instance, we work with our employees for quite a number of years. We're very open and transparent with them. I've messaged them personally. We have a communication channel on WhatsApp where, you know, at very least, you provide a sense of where the leadership is going, like what are we trying to do, where is our position, because I think the first thing that we need to address is the fear of, you know, they're not going to have a job at the end of this, and that doesn't help any business owner. If you lose your best people that you've worked with for 4 years, you're not really going to be in a good place when the issues subsides, you know, when the disease is over and when the economy is trying to be revamped back. So we implemented a very open and transparent communication method with our staff where, you know, we're not going to front. We're not going to say, hey, everything's okay. We're all good. And, you know, you guys are all great and all that. But we share the realities of the situation. The company's in many different issues of many different levels, where it's cash flow, whether it's debt collection from our debtors because they are non-operational, whether it's compliance with government regulations and payments of all the EPF, ISOCSO, the levies and all this that still go on while, you know, an MCO is on. So we are transparent and we share that with our staff. And I think the good ones will be supportive, and they know, and I see that the team is empathic to what we're going through, as long as, again, we are not particularly being unreasonable and unempathetic to their plight as well. You know, they are worried about their salary, they're worried about their health. So one of my companies works from home. So all of them are not in the office, and they're fine with that, and that functions. But one of my companies also is a manufacturing company, so we can't function. It's shut down. But we allow our staff to be at home and, you know, prioritize their health versus taking the risk of flouting government regulations and getting into roadblocks and getting arrested and things like that. So these are things that, you know, as employees and employers, we need to support the direction of the government, because if we don't, the disease is not going to go away, right? And if it doesn't go away, there's nothing that we can do to recover the economy.
And Joe, you recently wrote an open letter with suggestions on how the government should enforce some of the stimulus packages that were announced. Could you elaborate a bit more for us in terms of the challenges you're facing with what has been announced?
Sure. Okay, so when this happened, again, I say that this is a confluence of multiple major disasters, right? When you talk about an economic point of view, this started actually when COVID hit China and China locked down. because I'm a very, I would say, very involved in the export and e-commerce ecosystem within Malaysia, the immediate hit was on all traders who are selling products that are imported from China and exporting it out to the world through Amazon and eBay or whatever are the marketplaces that they work on, right? So this happened starting January. So you're already going to see massive suppression and issues. So what happened was that my management team, we usually run a quarterly review on our budget. We have monthly financial meetings, and we forecasted that, you know, this can get messy, really messy, very, very fast if this spreads. We started our applications and funding processes actually more than 3 weeks ago, I think a month plus, when they announced the SRF for anybody who is affected by COVID. And what we found is that, okay, you have the SRF. The SRF is a special relief fund that's announced by the Bank Negara and the government that allows dissemination of funds at a very competitive rate, with a moratorium and with the spirit of supporting companies that are affected by COVID and whatever other economic conditions at the time, right? So, when we went through this process, and bear in mind, we have companies that, my group of companies are 3 years old, 4 years old, and 5 years old. We have audited reports. We have all the documentation structured. We're a young company. We've got massive amount of growth, right? Where some are growing at more than 100% per year. They are profitable. Two of them are profitable last year. One's not because of the high growth. So in our position, when we applied for SRF, and found it so difficult to get through where, you know, things that I've highlighted, like banks created or they complied with certain regulations that didn't make sense. For instance, you must be a current customer of our bank, only then we can fund you. I mean, what is the requirement of that? Is that a business decision? Is that something that you're doing because you need to control where your funds go, or, you know, or you don't know the story of the customer, right? Because there's a risk evaluation there. So those are things that didn't quite make sense to me, number one. And number two, very, very restrictive to SMEs, myself at the start. And when I thought more about it, I'm like thinking, hey, if I went through this much problems trying to get the funding, imagine the SMEs out there who are far less savvy in terms of being fundraising or running a company or having the skill set or communicating or having the documentation or, you know, just not in the right place at the right time or in a desperate situation where they really need the funds as soon as possible, they're going to really be in a lot of trouble because the process is significantly challenging. And just a bit of background, I run as a point for the companies in terms of finance, in terms of projections, in terms of raising money. And I've been doing this quite often. So I have significant experience in doing this. And I thought to myself, if I suffer this much, the money is not going to reach the SMEs, regardless of what the government's doing. So, you know, instead of taking the point of view of, oh, hey, let's cry to the government, let's ask them for a lot more things, ask them for this and that and whatever, there's a million things that they need to pay for. So, you know, being a devil's advocate, I look at their point of view and say, hey, if everybody's just crying for money and we're just giving out, nothing's going to make sense, right? You know, they do not have unlimited resources as well. And as a country, we are not in a good place economically and, you know, budget-wise and spend-wise because of all the confluence of issues. So I thought to myself, okay, this is not going to work. What can we do to make things better? So the issue is not about what the government has done. They've done actually enough if you look at it carefully. The problem is what they're doing is not reaching the right people. So that was the core issue, because if I was going through this many issues, other companies are far worse in terms of getting the funds or getting what they need to support themselves in this time. So that was when I made a decision that, you know, this cannot be prolonged. Somebody needs to do something. But again, needs to do it in the right way. You don't just cry wolf all the time. You cry wolf and give a plan to catch the wolf, or, you know, sort it out, because there's no point in shouting out problems of the world without any kind of solution. At least if you've tried to think about it, it shows that there's a starting ground of where, you know, negotiations can start, or at least there's some recommendations. And that's how I came up with my list of seven items over there. So if you go through the list, the first issue is the secret CETOS concerns, which is basically, you know, if a company is having issues in repayments to the bank, they get listed in secrets and CETOS. But this is also used as an evaluation to whether you get the funds or not. And what is the point of it? Because the fund is for companies who are suffering. And it's been a bad situation since January. So if you evaluate from January and take that into consideration, you are, I mean, the fund is not serving the purpose that it's set up for, right? And next, the 2 years audited results, that will wipe out a huge number of applicable companies who need help. The current customer versus the current customer of a recognized financial institution. That was my recommendation, you know. Make it more open, because they want to see a track record. The banks want to see a track record, but don't force it to be your customer. So it can be a customer of any recognized financial institution. Then my recommendation number four is about, you know, you can't be giving out millions of ringgit every time. So you got to cap it with some sort of reasonable benchmark, right, in terms of the funding. So I thought 40% would be a reasonable amount. And the basics is to cover 1 year's worth of salary and rent, because that's what really kills the company. Right, salary and rent that goes on while your business is not operational. And that was my recommendation. Besides that, it was just simplification of the process and, you know, being more down to earth and open to how this fund can actually help the SMEs to survive this period. Because I think many of them, we don't really need, or we're not expecting free money of that level, because it's a lot of money per company, you know. Even for us, we're running at about 100,000 ringgit a month overheads. To expect the government to just, hey, Joe, it's a bad time, you know, I'm going to give you 75,000 every month just to support your overheads in this trying time is a bit rich, lah. Right. So we've got to be reasonable. And again, access to debt is a leveraged benefit, right? So the government has the ability to leverage on its facilities to offer debt to SMEs. And that's what I think is the best way forward. Because if you dare take debt on, you know, you sign off on a personal guarantee and you're going to pay it back. So the government gets its money back. Just what we need is really time to get through this.
You're listening to Joachim Sebastian there. He's the managing director of Everpeaks, who wrote an open letter, a letter to our PM from an SME, giving some great insights into challenges of him being in the SME space despite these stimulus packages. We're going to take a short break now. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. You are tuned in to Enterprise here on BFM 89.9.
Beats, funk, mixtapes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back, folks, to Enterprise. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Arvind Ibraj
and Christine Wong.
It is Tuesday, 31st of March, of course. It's also day 14 of the Movement Control Order, and we're still continuing our focus on SMEs. If you're only just tuning in, we managed to speak to Joachim Sebastian. He's the Managing Director of Everpeaks. We asked him a few questions just before the break. We're going to continue with that and ask him some more questions. Joe, earlier, you spoke about your challenges as an entrepreneur. After this MCO is over, how long do you think the process of recovery will be?
Oh, man, I'm going to be conservative about this. And again, maybe agreeable or disagreeable, or may cause quite a bit of panic in the environment. However, I believe the first priority is to get the disease under control. Nothing good is going to come out of coming out of the MCO without the disease being fully under control, because if we go back into another MCO because the disease suddenly bursts out again, it's not good for anyone, right? So my prediction is that it's going to take till mid-June to actually get out of this completely. If we have a vaccine or a medical intervention approved earlier, yes, I think probably mid, latest is still going to be end April when you really come out of it. The MCO is extended to the 14th of April right now, and I believe it will be extended again till the end of April at the very least. But in between this process, depends on what the government does and what the interventions are. I think that maybe a lesser form of the MCO will be affected post April 30th, and some sort of operations will be restored to SMEs or factories or, you know, logistics and whatever other economic services that can function on a toned down basis post April. So yeah, it's probably going to take till June. It's at the very earliest mid May. Nothing before that, I think. So that's just the disease, right? Then after that comes the economic interventions that must occur for us to recover sufficiently.
How do you think businesses can survive for the next 2 weeks or even further if the MCO continues?
Well, that's where funding comes through, right? So you sort of need to get the funding to the SMEs, number one. Get them to also to the unbanked SMEs. These are a huge, huge number of people, like, you know, the hawkers, the retailers, the gig workers, the freelancers, the musicians, the artists. These are people who have no access to some sort of track record with the bank. And I think intervention on their aspect, or at least a way that they can earn a living, you know, activate however they can earn within a month. So the April month, I think it's going to be burnt. There's nothing really anybody can do so much about it because the disease must be controlled. You know, many SMEs are crying foul about the stimulus package that was announced by the government. But, you know, I beg to differ. I think consider it in a different point of view where the government has to address the person on the ground, because if the person on the ground, the B40 and the M40 are not placated or not given a light at the end of the tunnel, if they are hungry, if they are starving, or they have no source of income and no light at the end of the tunnel, they're not going to comply with the MCO. And if they don't comply with the MCO, we're done for. The disease will not be controlled. So, you know, step by step, I believe that the government is working out something additional for the SMEs. I hope they are. I hope that my letter has, you know, reached the right levels of people to actually act on it. I hope that the local governments or the state governments are also doing something to support the SMEs and keep them functioning, giving them liquid cash at a very low approval level, and, you know, sustaining operations through this very, very trying period. Because honestly, I mean, look at it. The SMEs also know you're running a business, right? Business, there's ups, there's downs. If it's a flooding season, a rainy season, the retailers are going to get hit anyway. So it's not something that they don't know or they don't know how to handle. It's just that they are also looking for some sort of support in such times. And I think reducing the barriers to funding is going to be one of the easiest ways and cheapest ways that the government can take action upon this.
So are you feeling positive about how we come out of this, Joe? I mean, can businesses survive from this, or do you see some closing down for good?
I don't think the ending's going to be so positive because there are segments that will die. There are segments that will suffer, and we've got to be realistic about it. Like the one of the few segments that I feel may take even longer to recover is the startup segment, where, you know, these are companies that are ideation phase, or, you know, just pre-series A, where they're launching the idea, they're on a burn rate with no real revenue stream. You know, they're validating the technology, they're trying to get market share, and they're burning ad money or marketing money. These companies, man, I feel for them. You know, whatever, how good an idea you have, investors are going to start pulling back. They're going to get very conservative. They're going to stop the fund flows. You know, new deal flows are not going to happen because most of the investors need to shore up their current investments to make sure that they survive rather than take on new risks, you know, which have a very negative connotation in a time such as this, where there is actually, you know, this event is so... it's so beyond the mapping of what has happened because of a few factors. Number one, right, first is that it's a disease that surpasses Ebola in terms of death. You know, it's doing 20 plus thousand deaths right now, and Ebola capped at 50% of that, like 11,000. So on a disease scale, even though the morbidity is very low, this is a pretty nasty disease, you know. The only thing bigger than this was probably the Spanish flu. And that was a very long time ago, right? So you got the first issue with the disease. Then the next one is that I'm not sure if many of this is highlighted enough in the news as well, is that we're going through a global economic crisis where the oil prices drop so significantly. And being a country that's dependent on oil revenue and tax on oil revenue, this directly impacts the cash flow within our country. And not just our country, everywhere in the world where, you know, there's an oil trade war going on between Russia, US and OPEC. And this is hurting a lot of countries and economies. So that's the second thing that's going on. Then the third thing that's going on is, again, say what you want about it, the government did change. And whenever there's change, there's a huge volatility that comes with it, where leadership needs to realign, get back into the job, authority management changes, approval processes change, different alignments occur. And, you know, say what you want, as a business owner, you work with whatever happens, right? But these are still country-level effects. And these three things combined at the same time, I mean, it proves a very, very challenging scenario for our economy to bounce back on, or even to actually sustain. So, say it is unprecedented, the times that we're in. So you can't follow a certain template. You can't know the net impact. You know, you don't know what will happen at the end. You've just got to do your best in all the different segments that you can.
That was Joachim Sebastian, the managing director of Everpeak, who wrote an open letter, a letter to our PM from an SME. We are going to take a short break in just a moment, but don't forget, coming up at noon on Enterprise BizBytes, we're going to be asking you a question. That question is, how satisfied are you with online services during the MCO? Do let us know. Get us via WhatsApp 018-789-8899, Twitter or Instagram. We're available at BFM Radio. Short break. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.